edition of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Joe Favorito, along with
Tom Richardson.
And Tom, we've got a special guest today, not just an Olympian, but someone who's really built his own brand, Tim Morehouse, Olympic fencer, medalist, and founder of Fencing in the Schools. Tim, welcome.
Honored to be here with you guys. Thanks.
So why don't we get started? Just kind of walk us through how, you know, fencing in New York fits together to, you know, some amazing commercials that you did after the Olympics. And, you know, what was your kind of conscious effort growing up? And I mean, is it something you thought about building a brand, or did you always just want to be an Olympian?
You know, I never even knew what fencing was until I was 13. So the thought of building a brand was something that came much, much later. As you mentioned, I've been in a commercial with Serena Williams and done some stuff with Sean John, a national campaign, and really things that when I was starting out and just learning about fencing, there were sort of nowhere on the radar screen of what an Olympic fencer could get. I started fencing when I was 13. It was just something I loved doing. I went to Brandeis University for college, a Division III school that had never had an Olympian before. And, you know, my journey to the Olympics started sometime in college. I had this idea I wanted to try to go for the Olympics. People kind of told me I was crazy coming from a Division III school. I graduated college, joined Teach for America, and was teaching while I started training for the 04 Olympics. I made it to the 04 Olympics as a replacement athlete, and then went back to work in education. I was working for Teach for America while I was training for the Beijing Olympics. And I was just watching sort of in this journey as I went to Beijing, you know, what was happening with other sports. I was at the 04 Olympics and Mariel Zagunas won the gold and Seda Jacobson took the bronze. It was our first medal in decades. And people had always said if fencing just wins medals, everything was going to happen. People were going to be like fencing in the streets. It would change everything. And there was a little bit of a bump, and then it just sort of disappeared. And really start to look at, like, you know, there's a methodology behind what athletes in different sports are doing to grow their sports, and that fencing was nowhere in the game. So when it came to Beijing, I was like, if we win a medal, you know, how can I do the same thing that someone in track and field or swimming would be doing? And we won a silver medal in Beijing. The first medal in our event is 1948. And I was actually setting up appearances for my teammates and I on the Today Show and trying to give ourselves, like, our own media tour. You know, it wasn't really anyone else doing it, but I spent a lot of time at the Beijing Olympics kind of looking at behind the curtain of the business side of being an Olympic athlete. I was very fortunate. I had USOC people kind of guide me along the way. I started seeing all the brands had houses at the Olympics where athletes would go and get paid for appearances. And there was this whole world that really fencing was closed off to. And I think that's really where, as I came back from Beijing, the thought was in my mind, how do I take fencing to the next level? How is a fencing athlete, now a medalist, what would I have to do to actually get a sponsorship? And that journey, I think, really started in 08 when I started to, I think, first research what I would have to do.
And Tim, did you get any help in that process? Did you get some sort of agent or business manager to lead you through these treacherous waters of the business side of the world?
You know, funny story. So a lot of the agents were really nice and met with me and also one of my teammates, Jason Rogers, and none of them wanted any part of us as clients. I mean, they looked at fencing. Olympic athletes already do not make a lot of money in general. Unless you're representing Michael Phelps, you're really not going to be bringing home millions as an agent. So for an agent to want to take on a fencer was sort of like, yeah, right. But they were really nice, and they talked to me, and they sort of educated me a little bit. But really, I came back to New York City, and it was sort of like, okay, I have this goal. Like, I had a goal of being an Olympian, didn't know how I was going to get there. I now have this goal of trying to get a sponsorship, and how could I fund myself? I wanted to train full-time between Beijing and London, which I'd never been able to do. And I just started taking steps to figure out what I would need to do.
And as Tom said, but did anybody guide you along the way? It was really kind of a self-guided tour. And then the other question I had was, you know, you now do obviously a lot of fencing in schools programs. So how were you able to tie your brand experience, and I want you to talk a little bit about the commercials, and kind of the unique places you'll be seen on and have been seen on television. So how did you tie fencing, teaching, and your brand building all together to kind of get to where you are now, which is a pretty unusual triumvirate, especially for a fencer?
You know, so I would say that my three passions in my life are education, fencing, and the Olympic movement. And so those three things are always sort of like playing out in my life in one way or another. I had really no one guiding me, although a lot of people offered advice. I think the first 6 months or so after the Beijing Olympics was kind of a lot of experimentation. One sort of big moment was we were invited to like walk on a red carpet with like right after the Olympics in New York City, with like Michael Phelps was at the event, some other stuff, and there was like, you know, like it seemed like a movie premiere. Like 50 cameras were there taking pictures of my teammate and I with their medals, and people just started handing us business cards, and we started getting invited to events. So I think the journey started with like showing up to events, and people in New York City kind of felt like it was cool to be a fencer and to be a medalist. And we started getting like a lot of media just around sort of, as goofy and weird and odd as it sounds, like going out in New York City. And we got some like really small stuff, like an Italian brand gave us some suits, and people started giving us stuff to wear. And this was all like new, like people are giving me a suit to wear. And we just tried to like, I don't know what we were doing. We were just going around meeting people. I think actually a lot of people that I know now, 8 years later, all came from sort of a 6 month period where we were literally going out every night in New York City, sort of different events, charity events, different celebrity functions. And I think just learning and probably making a lot of goofy mistakes as well. But it was sort of an epiphany to realize that people could think fencing was really cool. One of the things that was also an interesting takeaway, and this goes to like, you know, brand building, is sort of, I guess, who thinks you're interesting. So we completely struck out when it came to anything typical sport athletes would get. Like ESPN, Sports Illustrated really wanted not that much. They didn't care. But New York City fashion folks and lifestyle folks loved fencing. So we got articles, as I mentioned, in Vanity Fair, a whole bunch of sort of style and fashion things. It sort of led to a little bit of modeling. And our first representation, this was kind of a big step, was we were signed by Wilhelmina Models.
Oh, wow.
Who was launching like a sports and fitness division. And that was like a big moment, like, wow, we have representation. And they thought fencing was really cool and sort of fit with fashion and lifestyle and all this stuff. And that was a big sort of all that, I would say, 6 month period of going to events and being on red carpets in New York. Sorry, it sounds really douchey, but it did lead to a lot of good stuff, led to us basically being signed to having an agent in management.
But Tim, were those deals or opportunities coming to you, or were you going to them and being opportunistic?
It was a little bit of both. Actually, the people that we tried the hardest to get to represent us said no. And I forget exactly how Wilhelmina came about, but most of the meetings we would go to, it was sort of like people giving the sort of, okay, we'll meet with them and shake their hand and say great job at the Olympics. But Wilhelmina, we went in and they were like, they were trying to convince us to sign with them, which was sort of funny. So yeah, I mean, we signed with them, and it was, I think, the next phase of figuring out what we had to do. We didn't have a sponsorship yet, but now we had representation.
It's funny, at one point, back in the day, Wilhelmina actually came to the Knicks and the Rangers and tried to get athletes to be involved in this cross-marketing promotion, which didn't work. And one of the things that came up from Steve Mills, who was the president of the Garden at the time, was you should have individual sport athletes do this as well. And maybe that's how they got to you. I'm not sure how much they're in that game right now, but it's certainly a tribute to you. So the two other things, number one, is take us through how the television commercials came about and what that was like, and was it financially viable for you as well? And then I want to talk a little bit about Star Wars too, because it seems to be kind of the hot new thing now with lightsabers and fencing.
Definitely. So I think the next phase we sort of went through, and I think this gets to how we ended up landing commercials and actual, you know, sponsorship deals. So I realize now, okay, I'm showing up at events, but really if we want to grow fencing, and we actually met with a number of great brands like Hugo Boss, a lot of marketing directors talked with us, and really the things they went through, they said they loved our story, but you know, there needs to be more like numbers behind what we're doing, like what is your actual reach? And really, like in New York City, you know, so my thinking started to get to how do I fence and have people see it? So I actually rented out Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City, which hosts rock concerts. And I said, I'm going to like put on a fencing event called Fencing Masters, and we're going to sell out Hammerstein Ballroom. And that could be a property that potentially we could get sponsorship for. So I think it was 2011 we did the first one. People told me I was crazy. It was all my own money. I rented out Hammerstein Ballroom, flew in athletes from around the world.
Who were some of the athletes, by the way?
We brought in Aldo Montano from Italy, who's one of the most popular athletes in the world. We had, I think, a fencer from Spain. We had Olga Karlan from Ukraine, who's a gold medalist and is, you know, now sponsored by Red Bull and a very popular fencer in Europe. And we were able to get it on SNY. And we went through this whole thing of getting... the goal is to put on TV, but I didn't know how we were going to do that when we started. And we were able to find some partners to help us produce kind of a low budget, but still looking good TV broadcast. Once we did that, we didn't really have... But we sold tables, you know, for $5,000. We had drinks and fencing. And you couldn't get 2,000 people to show up free to fencing. So we were charging, like, our minimum ticket was, like, $20. We made $150 seats, and people were buying them.
But drinks and fencing don't sound like a good combination.
No, it was a good, you know, it fit with the New York City realm. We had, like, some celebrities come. We had a lot of media there. It was, like, an event. It was a thing. And then we did it again, and this is really where we got our first, like, sort of significant corporate sponsorship dollars, and we had Sabra Hummus came on and sponsored the event right before the London Olympics. And that one, we sold out Hammerstein Ballroom, and we were also able to get the event on national TV at Universal Sports, which actually opened up a relationship for fencing as well with Universal. It was not a, like, I didn't make money on it, but I think it was sort of a next step of realizing, A, we can get people to show up to fencing, that sponsors would be interested if we had the right product for them. We put it on in the right way. We made their logos look nice. And then I, you know, went to the London Olympics also realizing that if we get people excited about fencing, where do they go? I had people emailing me the whole time asking, where do I get my kid fencing from all around the country? And that's really where the foundation idea came, to start fencing in the schools. And so we launched that. And really this whole time I've been just keeping people, you know, just little tips, but anytime I met someone, keeping that in touch with them, sending them little updates. The Sean John campaign that I ended up doing, it was someone I met like 2 years prior. We had a really good conversation. They just remember that I was a fencer and they wanted to have something unique. And they just called and said, we'd like to have you do the Sean John campaign. So same thing with the
It chief. Happens to Tom and I all the time.
Yes.
So,
you know,
we have a lot in common.
Yeah. I remember, like, I had been trying to get a Citibank thing before London because they also sponsor foundations and wasn't able to secure them. So it's sort of funny. Sometimes you spend a lot of effort on something and get nothing, and sometimes just things fall into your lap, sort of the way it works. Like, Chase just fell into my lap. They called. They said, we'd like to have you in a commercial. We love your story. I mean, they looked online at my background, the work that I've been doing with, you know, with kids and foundations. They felt I'd be a good representative for the brand as an Olympian, but also all the other work we were doing. And basically, they like to want to be in this commercial.
But to be fair, it doesn't just happen. It happened because of all the work that you put into it. And most importantly, telling your story effectively, which we talk about a lot in class, and building your own brand. And you've done, you know, an unbelievable job in building your own brand and influencing people well beyond, you know, a lot of what people would consider niche sports.
So, right, and it also sounds like you have very significant networking skills, and you're kind of a natural connector.
Is that
something you honed along the way, or were you conscious of the fact that it was an important part of the game?
It became conscious to me right after that, the Beijing Olympics, and just meeting people and how even going to events, I think when you can meet someone over a drink versus an office meeting. I've made more deals and secured more things just meeting people casually.
The power of alcohol, we like that.
So, and not even alcohol, but just the power of the casual meeting.
Yep.
Just showing up.
When you come to someone sort of for a formal meeting at the office, they probably got a lot of things on their mind. It's just much different to meet someone out. Maybe you meet them and their wife and you have a nice conversation and they take a natural interest. I think that's been my most successful tool in securing people, is just meeting people organically and building relationships over time, even if it was 2 years later that something came about. You know, it's just everyone I meet, I try to be nice, respectful, learn a bit about them, tell them a little bit about my story. And to your point, storytelling is more than just you're at the front of a room talking to 50 people. Storytelling is you might meet 20 people in the course of a week, and what are you putting out about yourself and what, mm-hmm. what you're about. And I think that's those little things that add up. Like, how do you leave a memorable impression on someone that 6 months later something comes across their desk and they might think of you? And that's been a lot of the stuff that we've gotten. And I think it's only going to grow now. We're actually in some talks with another huge brand for a commercial. But the Chase one's the largest one in fencing history. We had, you know, my image up in every Chase branch and,
wasn't a Super Bowl commercial, but it was on a lot during, you know, a lot of broadcasts. It was on during the U.S. Open, which is another place where you kind
I've been trying to maybe convert some of those communication skills into a broadcast career myself. So I was just amazing opportunities to, I hosted a live show at the US Open, which was an amazing experience.
And your co-host was, Tom will know.
Oh, Julia Alexandria.
Oh, great.
Another good friend of our program.
Yes, yes. She was great. I learned a lot from her. Learned a lot, again, the US Open sort of for me where I want to take fencing. So it was great to see the behind the scenes. Like, that's where I want fencing to be. And look, things are popular because people make them that way. I think if you look at tennis and look where tennis was 30 years ago and what the US Open looked like 30 years ago, you know, or 40 years ago, it was sort of this thing out in the middle of nowhere. The stadium didn't look very nice. And now it's huge business. One of the biggest events in the world that everyone's at. So it took people putting in the effort to make it. I think fencing is a small sport really because of how the people have guided it potentially incorrectly, or not just wanted this vision of more people to have access to it. A lot of what drives me now, the goal is to like get millions of people fencing. So we're doing everything from working on technology. We've been working with IDEO to revamp the technology of fencing. The system hasn't changed since 1918.
And that's a problem.
That's a problem. So a big part of what we're doing now is trying to like revamp it. It's a long-term project. We could potentially reduce the cost of fencing in half. And now you have a whole other angle for me to brand in, because now you've got us working on kind of modern technology, and we've had some articles in The Verge about what we're working on. And I think my goal is to make fencing the highest tech sport in the world, mm-hmm. and to really make it the sport of the future, where you want to bring it back to Star Wars, but weapons that light up, you can just pick it up and go. The weapon will give you the feedback on whether you're scoring or not. Right now we have an antiquated system. You got to have wires plugged in. It takes you 20 minutes to get dressed. You got to look at a machine. You got to look at a referee. And I think we can, with the technology that exists, we can make fencing to a very, very cool modern sport with lots of data, lots of statistics, and a sport that kids are going to love.
Tim, are you collaborating with specific tech companies for that initiative?
Well, we kicked it off with IDEO. They're the company that helped Steve Jobs design the Apple
Mouse. Yeah, the company out of San Francisco and Stanford?
Yeah, so we've been out to Palo Alto numerous times. They're really the ones. I have 8 patents filed for technology that goes far into the future of fencing. And we've been raising money. I think that's been another part of it, too. I raised money for our foundation, put those communication skills to work. We're close to $1 million in on research and development for fencing technology. And that's just, I guess, a gamble I've made, that if we're going to get millions of people fencing, we got to reduce the cost and make the technology much more easier for people to access the sport. When we go to schools, the kids go crazy. They love it. So I know if I can put a really cool foil in kids' hands, or saber in a kid's hands, that, I mean, I think the sport can absolutely blow up.
And then how about some virtual reality?
Exactly. I mean, we were just talking about that earlier today. We have an online learning platform. There's, in order to build, you know, when you think of an athlete brand, so I have to also think about my sport. So I've been trying to build the infrastructure of my sport, which means at the top of the pyramid, getting the word out there to millions of people. Okay, millions of people know about it, but now where can they go to actually participate in it?
Right.
And then everything in between there. So they start it, how do they keep going, and then all those avenues of things that help create, I don't know, really a movement around the sport. So we have a tiny amount of people fencing still. But if we can get more people fencing, you need the marketing, and then you also need the programs. And we're working on both ends of that, reducing the cost and just making it really cool.
So for other athletes, I mean, there's definitely a strategy part to fencing that people don't realize sometimes. Have you seen kind of an influx of people, even on the curiosity side, to say, hey, what is this, and how would I get involved? And then the question, obviously, that leads to is, how do they get involved and how do they find you?
Well, first of all, fencing has grown massively in the last 10 years. And it's not just myself. We have a number of other people doing a lot of great work in the sport. I think actually, I like to say, I think I've had a good influence on our fencing athletes, because if you look at the Rio Olympics now, we have 3, 4, 5, 6 athletes who have sponsorship.
Wow.
And we had like 0 in 2004.
And what are some of those brands?
So Dick's Sporting Goods is going to be sponsoring 2 of our athletes. I have to make sure I don't reveal anything that I'm not supposed to yet too early. We have a number of non-Olympic sponsors. Like if you look at Iftihaj Muhammad, will be the first Muslim woman competing for the U.S. wearing a hijab. Is a big story
that just came out
right now
a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and I know Dick's is sponsoring her, and she's a number of other brands.
This summer she'll be in the Olympics.
Officially qualified. I think the brands that I know are not officially announced, so I don't want to say anything I'm not supposed to. But you know, there's 5 or 6 fencers now with sponsorships that will be in commercials. Nike is sponsoring a number of fencing athletes more so than they have before. And I would call it like, you know, real sponsorship dollars, activation at events and in commercials. So I think it's, there's a new day for fencing in regards to how strong our Olympic team is and how the athlete, and this is all athlete driven. I mean, really, if you ask, is there a mastermind behind it? It's like the athletes, in the same way that our sport's gotten better, coaches and athletes, the athletes have really just done it.
Has social media played a role?
Social media helps a lot because you can build a brand on your own. And you got to be careful too. Like when we did, you know, when Chase was coming to me, they did an audit of all my social media.
That's really interesting to hear.
And they went through every last post. And I was like, you know what? I generally don't post anything controversial. But who knows? Maybe like one time a year and a half ago, I don't know, Time Warner Cable pissed me off and I wrote something nasty. And maybe that would be something like they don't want a guy who's going to say anything bad about a corporate brand. So you don't know. So
you wouldn't be the first.
Yes. Yeah, so there was a company whose job was to audit my social media. And again, I'm very careful about what I put down. But you never know. If you're putting out thoughts every single day, you've got to be very careful about how you do that and how you position yourself.
So, Tim, with the Rio Olympics coming up in a few more months this summer, what can we expect vis-a-vis the profile of fencing as one of the sports that will be profiled both in broadcast and in digital?
I mean, I think it's going to be I think this is the next step for us, this Olympics. We have the strongest Olympic team we've ever had in regards to where people are ranked going in. And we have already, and really, the Olympics is a machine. A lot of the sponsorship stuff is done almost before the games. So athletes really make their money going into the games. Even if you win the gold, there's a little bit of a window after it closes very quickly. Actually, one of the reasons why I started getting notoriety is we were keeping fencing sort of in the media in non-Olympic years. And bigger sport brands were like, how is this fencer doing this, getting media in like, when it's not the Olympics, when like we can't even get media for our much, much bigger athletes in non-Olympic years. So that was actually a really important part because, you know, you get a lot of stuff during the Olympics, but there's a whole lot of noise.
Right.
Because everyone's in commercials and everything else. It can be harder to stand out. So that those non-Olympic era stuff sometimes, like the Chase commercial, if it was running during the Olympics, might just have been another one of 20 things, but it was running in a non-Olympic year.
Mixed in athletes from other sports as well.
Yeah. I mean, being with Serena Williams, she's one of the greatest athletes in the world, like. Come on, that's ridiculous. No. To be in the same sentence as her is like, yeah, beyond your wildest dream. And I'm not in her category of excellence. But
so are you going to have any role this summer officially as either a commentator or announcer or man about town when it comes to
That's my goal. I'd like to go broadcast the games. Again, I'm competing with bigger sport athletes. I'm hoping to – I want to cover more broadly. I really enjoy like – more the lifestyle type of stuff. Like I was a correspondent for E! News, special correspondent for them for a year. I love that kind of getting to know the athletes and kind of the fun, maybe more bubblegum type stuff. That's what I do for AOL is kind of interviews about what's going on in people's lives. And I use that as well. Every last point that I can use, I think it's all about bringing, when I'm doing AOL Build, I'm meeting great folks. I interview Tim Gunn for AOL Build. And he's been fencing now, and he's been really enjoying it. He donated to my foundation. He's, you know, so all those things, each part of my life, I can kind of bring it to bear on another part. So I'm hoping to be there as broadcaster.
So maybe you can just sit in the stands this summer and Periscope off of your iPhone.
Yeah, but you know what? This is what I learned too, is in some ways you can't just wait. So, you know, while I'm in between gigs, you know, I do AOL Build, but even in my fencing studio, we're going to start doing an interview series there and putting together kind of 3-camera interview things, once a professional. And that's just going to build my experience because you got to get, it's hard to break in. Anyone tells you that industry is very difficult. It's hard to break in and you need experience. And when I get that moment, just like as an Olympian, I want to be ready. So, you know, when you're building your brand, like we're trying to get sponsorship, whatever, you have your end goal, but you've got all the things in the middle you've got to do and you got to be ready at any moment to take advantage of an opportunity. Like I was ready for that US Open show. I learned a lot. I got better. The worst thing I ever did was watching my shows backwards because I got to see myself get worse as I watched them afterwards.
I spend most of my days doing that.
Yeah. So I'm like, man, I was like, yeah, I'm like pretty good. And then I'm like, by the start of it, I was terrible, I felt. But I had been trying to get any opportunity in front of the camera interviewing people. It's a very different skill than being on the other side.
Yeah.
But at least I had enough of a foundation to know what I was doing, and had to fake it till I got strong enough to feel like, and now I feel like, you know what, I can do this.
Right.
So speaking of foundations, as we wrap up this edition of the show, where can we find your foundation? How can people follow you? And what's the most important thing you'd like to tell people about how you got to where you are?
So to follow me, it's usually at Tim Morehouse on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. My foundation is Fencing in the Schools. We bring fencing programs to low-income schools. We just started our first varsity team this year in Harlem, and we've introduced over 15,000 kids to fencing across 9 states over the last few years through our PE program, and that's fencingintheschools.org. I mean, the most important thing, look, I think I lead my life trying to learn as much as I can. I try to learn from every experience. And I also want to be able to help people, and I'm always trying to be really clear about my goals. And so I don't think being famous is a goal unto itself. Like, my goal initially was to, how do I have to get a sponsorship? And I had to do some of the things I had to do to get there, whether that's social media. It might be different for different people, but my goal is to like help millions of kids with the sport of fencing and to grow the sport. And I believe as a part of that, we're going to help a lot of people. As I mentioned, I did Teach for America, and I think sports in general can help a lot of kids. And we're losing it, so I'm kind of in that fight as well to bring funding back to sports and schools. So,
well, Tim Morehouse, keep fighting. Thank you for joining us on this edition of The Cusp Show.
Tim, absolute pleasure to have you. Thank you so much, and we'll look forward to seeing you this summer around the Olympics.
Awesome. It's an honor, and you guys are great, and hopefully you guys got some value from this, and thank you, Joe, and thank you guys for having me.
Thank you, and once again, I'm Joe Favorito, my co-host.
Tom Richardson, thanks for listening to this edition of The Cusp Show. We'll be back next week with a new guest.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Cusp Show. That's the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson. My co-host is Joe Favorito. And our production assistant this week is Columbia student James Appel. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple's podcast app, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and on other key platforms. You can also see it at blogtalkradio.com/The Cusp Show. And you can get in touch with us on Twitter at CUSportsBiz, that's B-I-Z. Also, you can find out more about our program, the Columbia University Sports Management Program, by going online at sps.columbia.edu/sports-management. Thank you.